Previously on the Tony Kornheiser Show.
Okay.
Paul Bunyan.
And that's all we've got.
Well, we have Tiger. I mean, tomorrow, Tiger, Sansi's going to be out
there. We got the note from Sansi. That's right,
yes. Sansi's going to be out there watching Tiger. Michael, Tiger has won 8 times at Torrey Pines in a variety of tournaments, including the U.S. Junior, I think he won at Torrey Pines. Do we like him? Do we think he's going
to
win?
Why did you set me up to be attacked by your listeners?
Why? Just so you know, I did not plan for any of this Tiger talk. This is a non-story. But if you ask.
Yes.
Yeah. Yes. I think...
This is General George Washington, and you're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
For a change, it's raining. It's raining in Washington, goodness. Expecting an inch to an inch and a half
warm.
Of rain.
Very warm.
It's like in the 50s, and it'll be in the 30s tonight as we
it's
go
not even
through.
The weekend.
Yeah, bad weather. We're at Chatter at the corner of Wisconsin Avenue Northwest, Jennifer Street Northwest. We are available for all furloughed workers that bring in their federal ID. They get a 15% discount on most foods. Not happy hour, but most foods. That's our small part because we're not Jose Andres. We're not that rich, and we're not going
world.
For the Nobel.
There were a bunch of folks from NASA that stopped by for lunch yesterday.
Wonderful.
Noah, our guy in NASA, was leading that charge.
That's
it was great
good.
To see them here.
Gary Braun is here. Chris Saliza is here. Michael Kornheiser is here. Nigel is producing, running the board, doing the news. So last night, I'm just going to veer off. I will get to James Harden in this segment, but I'm going to veer off first. I went to dinner last night at the Palm. Michael was running the show last night. Eric was off. I went to dinner because Norby Williamson, who is one of the executive vice presidents of ESPN, was in town, mostly to visit his son, Matt, who was a former intern of sorts on this radio program or on this high-quality podcast. And so he wanted to take people out to dinner. You know, once a year, it's just very nice. So Wilbon and Rideholm and Kelleher and myself and young Matt Williamson, we went to the Palm. I was leaving. I was going to drive over there, and I was going to drive Norby and Matt over there, and Mike said, I'm going to walk. I'm going to walk with Eric and Kelleher. I'm going to walk over there. It's a nice night, and it was a very nice night.
It's
about 5 blocks. It's about 5 blocks. So we get there, and then about 10 minutes later, Rideholm and Kelleher get there, and I go, where's Wilbon? And they go, well, we don't know. I said, well, wasn't he going to walk with you? I said, well, he didn't say anything to us. Well, is he coming? So anyway, Wilbon does show up.
Walking. I thought you were going to say he meant, I'm going to walk. He was out.
No, so he just walked over on his own. So we had a very nice dinner. And it was exciting because Joe Beninati, who does the Capitals play-by-play, was there.
Here.
Now, what happened last night was the Capitals played in Toronto. And this was the last game, I think, before the All-Star break.
Yep.
But NBC took that game. So there was no local broadcast. So what Joe did, you know where, Michael, you know where I usually sit in those booths of three right in the front?
Yes.
They removed the booths, and they made that into a big screen, and Joe Beninati was talking about the Capitals as the game was going on.
How about that?
That's so cool. You could go
was
in there.
Was this a Palm-sponsored event?
Yeah. Oh, in fact, Beninati bought us a round of drinks at the table, which was very, very nice.
Love Joe.
Very nice.
Yeah,
so he and I had this nice talk. He came over. We were talking about the Capitals and winning the Stanley Cup. And I had run into Leonsis, you remember this, at a tennis event. And I said, you know, he was having a hard time decompressing and relaxing and enjoying it. And we just chatted amiably, and then he went to work, and I continued at this dinner. Okay, so I find out from Michael, who's the maitre d' last night, and one of the maitre d's along with Eric, Michael says, and it's a big night because Joe Beninati's here. I go, okay, great. You know, I like him. It's fine.
And he's also, a big star.
And also George Solomon is going to be here. Oh, okay. Why is George going to be here? Well, George is here doing something. I said, okay, fine. George was my boss for many years at the Washington Post. So we're sitting down, and I find out that George is going to he's going to dinner, apparently. Or he tells me this. Yeah, before the guy gets here, he tells me he's going to dinner with a Maryland men's soccer coach. And I say, prompted, of course, by Rideholm and Kelleher, I say, well, you got to get rid of that guy. You got to get rid of that guy because Amy Shapiro's husband, Josh, I mean, Amy's family to me and Mike.
Right.
She was our assistant for years.
Forever.
She's family. Amy's husband, Josh, had just won the D3 National Championship.
Oh, I didn't know that.
At Tufts.
That's correct.
And that's his third D3 Championship at Tufts. So get rid
bring
of
him
this,
home.
Get rid of this bozo and bring this guy in. Okay.
Nailed it.
I then find out.
Your guy's done, the Maryland guy's done pretty well, too. Maybe you don't follow that. Or is that where this is going? I'm sorry.
Yes,
forgive
but thank
me.
You
okay.
for stepping
well, go,
on
go
it.
Ahead. I'm wow. sorry. I figured you would know that, being
so
a little
So the wow. guy comes over to Look the out. Table. I don't say anything more about
well, yeah,
this because this is the
him.
Guy.
Yeah.
His name is Sacho Sarovsky. Sacho Sarovsky.
Sacho.
Sacho. Sacho, I believe.
Sacho.
Yes.
Sarovsky.
Yes.
It's a very pleasant yeah. guy.
Seems nice.
Very pleasant guy. And I find out that he has won 3 D1 national yeah. championships, including last month.
Right.
Huh. I can't get rid of this guy.
Now
I feel fairly stupid. This is a Jeff Ma moment for me. I feel like a dunce. So I withdraw from that part of the conversation.
It's weird because your familiarity with soccer is so high. I would have assumed that you would have.
Well,
I didn't mean to step
Maryland,
on you. I just thought, you know,
Maryland
you read that
is a huge
paper every day. Yeah,
huge. I would actually. Yeah.
So this guy must be a great coach.
Tooting
well,
my
so what
school's
am I
own
doing?
Horn for once. Georgetown is actually, but also an excellent men's soccer program and made it to the national championship game against Indiana about four or five years ago.
Right.
Not Maryland is more storied, but we have some very good. College men's soccer in this area.
So I don't want to fire Sarovsky at all. By the way, you know who used to be great at soccer? Was American University.
Yeah, huh,
they won
that.
The national championship about 20 years ago.
I follow Eric.
It's a good area for soccer.
I follow
football.
Eric Reinholm.
You know,
Reinholm.
They call it football in other
That's
parts of the world.
Football. Oh. It's really good football. Yes.
I follow Eric Reinholm on the social media, and I saw he did a close-up, like kind of a creepy close-up of your face.
Why would he do that?
At the palm. Not your actual
caricature.
Face, but
the
your caricature.
Caricature when I was 25.
It looks like you have a flowing
I have
locks.
Hair. Yeah,
I have never seen, I don't, yeah, not invited to the palm,
like
I'm not that kind
of
guy.
Right.
So I hadn't seen it. Man,
yeah,
a lot of hair, because you have beard and
that's
like
at least,
long
that's,
hair.
It's a flowing mane.
That's 35
yeah.
years
yeah.
ago. Yeah. That's 35 years ago.
Like Cato Kaelin.
I don't have that anymore.
And by the way, he does look a little like Cato Kaelin in that picture.
A little bit, when he was a younger man.
All due respect for this coach.
When I wore a younger man's clothes.
All due respect for Sarovsky. I mean, that's fine. He won the championship last year, but this is this year. What's he done this year?
No, I thought it was this year.
It is
2018. This past season.
I mean,
well,
think about it.
If you want to rest
we're
on
your laurels.
We're
22 days in.
Division okay. Division 3
anyway,
is
so
two
I was
more
gonna
than
mention,
Division 1.
I woke up this morning and I looked at the paper and the Capitals lost again and gave up 6 goals
yeah.
again. They'd given up a lot of goals.
Another
hat
trick. Yeah. That was the fourth
of Ovechkin got another one?
No, the other
gave
team.
Gave one up.
So something's wrong there. Anyway, so let me get
something
to...
Something is wrong there.
Let me get to the big news in sports, which is James
goals.
Harden, and let me be self-referential again. Yesterday, we were playing the game over-under, and one of the questions was over-under 50 for James Harden last night. And I start off, and I say, you know... James Harden only gets to go to Madison Square Garden once a year. He's going to want to put up a big number. This is going to be a big deal for him. So I said 50 is in play, and as Gary heard me say, 60 is in play. But then I said, I'm going to go under. I'm going to think that maybe the current coach of the Knicks, if he's still the coach, the one-year and done Fizdale, that he would appeal to his charges to like have some spine and stop this guy. Wilbon, I think, went over.
He did.
Wilbon went over. But Wilbon didn't have 61. James Harden had 61. What James Harden is doing, I don't really know what to make of it because it's their only path to victory without Chris Paul and without Clint Capella. It's the only way Houston can win is if Harden scores a lot of points. I don't want to say that it makes him. It doesn't make him the greatest of anything. It does not. It makes him the best scorer right now.
Right.
The best scorer I ever covered was Rick Barry. Rick Barry would go over 50 in the ABA on a regular basis and in the NBA as well. Rick Barry was a great and natural scorer. James Harden is a great scorer. The most intriguing thing about this that Gary and I talked about before we went on the air, there are no assisted baskets by Harden. None. Now, that doesn't mean Harden doesn't pass the ball because he gets some assists.
Four assists.
Yeah,
Harden
four
passes.
Assists.
Well, I think he averages probably 6 or 7.
Yeah, yep.
He doesn't pass the ball a lot, but he doesn't. It ain't Carmelo Anthony or Elvin Hayes, for you people old enough to remember.
He's not there to distribute.
No, but he doesn't.
But
unlike Elvin Hayes and Carmelo Anthony, sometimes James Harden passes the ball. They always shoot the ball. Mm-hmm. But if you have no assisted baskets, what that means is that once you get the ball, you dribble around. You don't go up. Yeah. This isn't Klay Thompson.
It's ISO ball.
All of Klay Thompson's baskets come from assists.
Right.
No, this is James Harden dribbling until he finds a spot where he's comfortable to take a shot.
Just to clarify, because I don't think you said what you meant, you said he doesn't get many assists.
No,
you
he doesn't get assisted baskets.
Correct. His baskets are not being assisted. Passed
they
to.
Are self-created.
Right. Yeah. He is not being passed to underneath the hoop and laying it in.
Even if he is, he won't lay it in.
So
he will dribble outside to find something he likes.
Exhibit A, five games ago, he had a three-game stretch where he scored 163 points.
Oh.
Not a single point was assisted.
That's amazing.
Last night, he had 61.
None.
I believe not a single point was assisted.
I'm not trying to say that he doesn't pass the ball, because he does.
No.
But offense entirely runs from. The ball is in his hand from beginning to end. That's
your point. Give the ball to James and box out. I mean, that's the offense. He had four assists. The rest of the team had six.
To someone else other than James Harden.
Right.
Because
scored 53 points. So on 53 points that he didn't score.
My point is it is not necessarily that people aren't trying to give him the ball in a position to catch and shoot. Mm-hmm. It's that he doesn't do it that way.
Right.
He creates his own
to break you down.
Stuff.
Yeah.
I'm
he pushes off with his right hand.
He only 25
free throws last night, made 22.
No Brad Jackson.
What do you make of it?
Well, so I'm with you on we have to be careful about saying greatest or this or that. But he is shooting a lot of shots.
Oh yeah.
At the same time,
if he throws a lot of 14 for 32s and 14 for 34s.
He was 17 for 38 last night, which is not terrible given the volume of shots.
Fine.
Okay. But given what they rolled out there, okay, the other starters are Eric Gordon, who's good player.
He's a good player.
Austin Rivers, who the Wizards traded and then got cut. PJ Tucker, fine.
The decaying carcass
and
PJ Tucker.
Kenneth Faried, which is a similar kind of setup to PJ Tucker. If you're the Knicks, you know, I mean, unless you've been on another planet, you know who's going to try to score all the points. The fact that he
stop him.
Even, I mean, people say, well, he's shooting a lot. Well, the Knicks know he's going to try to score 60 points. Just stop him.
Yeah, do like the Patso Scurry thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, do like a triangle and two or
something.
Don't
let him be. Bill Belichick, were he a basketball coach, would say, we're taking this guy out.
Right, yeah. Right.
I mean, these other guys, they beat us fine. But this guy's not going to beat us. And this guy beat them.
Did you see, I watched this game last night, Spurs Sixers, did you watch him? It was the ESPN game.
I went to dinner and then I came back and I finished watching a movie.
Okay. It was an 8 o'clock start.
For
so I thought maybe
night
a
in
little.
I don't know 30. I didn't go through the dial to find either the Bourne Ultimatum or the Bourne Supremacy.
Those are terrific.
I continue to watch it till the end.
Here are two lines from the Sixers.
Embiid,
33-19.
He's a stud. And Simmons.
Ben Simmons, he had 21, 15 assists, 10 rebounds, 9 for 14 from the field. He will not shoot the ball from anywhere further out than the foul line. And often not even then. But, I mean,
he have to?
He doesn't.
You know, he doesn't have to on that.
Do what you need to do. But Embiid.
Markelle Fultz won't either, but he's not playing.
Have not watched the Sixers and you care at all about basketball, watch Embiid play. He did some moves last night, and to their credit, whoever the team was on the game said this, that you've not seen a post guy do that since Hakeem. And remember that Embiid is 7'3".
Nice, really something. All right, so that's sports. That's what we've done. We'll take a break. When we come back, Ann Hornaday is going to join us. We're going to break down the Oscars, the Oscar nominations. That's right, Ann Hornaday. I'm Tony Kornheiser.
You're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is the Lowe's ad, and did I mention that Ann Hornaday is going to join us when we return? Lowe's is my new go-to destination where I can explore the latest innovative Craftsman products, including their new V20 power tool battery platform. I can imagine, by the way, that a listener out there is going to say, I've got to get this for Tony.
Yeah.
Because once he gets this V20 power tool battery platform,
Won't be able to put it down.
He will be converted into being a tool guy. No, I'm not.
Don't do that. Don't,
yeah,
please.
Don't get him out.
Craftsman's V20 cordless power tool lineup features a high-capacity lithium battery that's part of Craftsman's interchangeable battery system, so it works with all tools in the V20 lineup. Gives you the runtime you need, gives you the power you deserve. This one battery system works on multiple products, making the V20 lineup easy to use and versatile. And you know, your lineup has to be versatile, or
has
else you can't
be.
Win.
Verbile, yeah, and versatile.
V20 brushless power tools are proudly made in the United States of America. There's global materials at use, but they are manufactured, put together in Charlotte, North Carolina. All have brushless motors delivering high efficiency, better runtime, more power, and greater durability for all of your projects. And you, not me, you, can explore the entire Craftsman V20 lineup at your local Lowe's store or visit Lowe's.com/Tony. That's Lowe's.com/Tony. Lowe's, the new home of Craftsman. And did I mention Ann Hornaday will join us.
You're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is sent us by Brian Bowles in Charlotte, North Carolina. And he writes, "Hey gang, here's a new song, Somebody Else, by my 16-year-old son, Blake Bowles, wow, and his friend Ethan Regan,
Malake,
from down here in the northern burbs of Charlotte, both sophomores at Huff High School, UNC's Luke Mays High School.
Oh.
This is the first song they've collaborated on. Blake created the beat and mixing the song. And Ethan, who's an excellent singer-guitarist. Both are young, getting started. As a dad, I could not be prouder of Blake. And now he has immersed himself into the science of music production. Let's just hope he doesn't end up running a board with as many mistakes as Nigel seems to continue to make.
Kind of came out of nowhere.
We hope you like the song. You can find more of Blake and Ethan's music on SoundCloud at B Bowles and at Ethan Regan Official.
Sounds great. He's 16.
16.
Yeah.
16 years old.
Stevie Winwood, 16, when he did that. Give Me Some Lovin'.
Yeah. Paul McCartney wrote When I'm 64 when he was 16. So eat it, Ethan.
He did?
Yes.
When I'm 64 when he was 16?
Yes. He also wrote, he also wrote another one. I'll look it up. Wow. He also wrote one you would know when he was 16 that became a Beatles hit.
Okay. Yeah. Ann Hornaday joins us now, and we're going to break down all of the Oscar nominations, and then I'm going to talk about movies, Ann, that I have seen in the last week. 5 different movies, only one of which I thought was worth seeing. But let us start, if you don't mind, with the biggest surprises, not yet who was snubbed, but the surprises for you of the actual nominees where you said, I didn't see that coming. Let's just deal with the major categories of acting awards and best picture. You can go into director if you want, but you're going to lose me. You know.
Okay.
Okay.
Well, with the acting, you know, what really surprised me was that the Roma actresses both got nods, Yalitza Aparicio and Marina de Tavira. I did not see that coming.
Okay.
And the reason is because Yalitza Aparicio is a non-professional actress that Alfonso Cuarón discovered. Mm. She was on her way to becoming a teacher. And, you know, because the individual branches nominate their nominees, I didn't think the professional actors usually... In my mind, they usually don't reward non-professional casts.
Right.
So that did surprise me. And just the overall number of nominations Roma got, I think, put to rest any sense that we think that there's any kind of stigma against Netflix. I mean, you know, when I was out in L.A. in January, I did not pick up any vibes that people were freaking out over Netflix or mad at them about the theatrical window. If anything, people were grumbling about the amount of money they were spending on this awards campaign, and it was profligate. I mean, they spent a lot of money to get these nominations, and there's a tipping point. You know, I mean, Harvey Weinstein was the master of it, and he would tiptoe up to that line until you'd almost turn people off. And apparently it worked, and so that did surprise me that Roma got so much love across so many categories. Let's see. I was a little bit surprised that The Favorite did that well, frankly. I didn't think that was going to be quite as popular as it was with the Academy, but they loved it. It got 10 nominations along with Roma. So I guess those were my two biggest surprises.
What about the snubs? I mean, the first one that comes to mind is if you're going to nominate Bradley Cooper and the movie and Lady Gaga, and Bradley Cooper directed the movie, this is sort of like with Ben Affleck, right, in Argo, where you go, well, gee, how come he's not? I assume you think that's a snub, but maybe I'm making the wrong assumption.
You know what, though? If you look at who kind of got that slot, if you want to think about in terms of slots, it went to Pavel Pavlikowski, who did Cold War, which is a masterpiece.
And yeah, I don't know it at all. Yeah, I don't.
You would like it, Tony. I mean, I actually, you like Death of Stalin, right?
Thought it was totally cool. Totally cool, Death of Stalin.
This is the serious version. I mean, this is, you know, similar time period, but it's a beautiful movie, and every single frame is so exquisitely composed, and it's such an exquisitely, superbly crafted movie that I see why they went. You know, it's like if you're going to lose your slot to anyone, losing it to Pavlikowski is an honor. know what I mean?
Like, okay.
It is such a superb achievement, and I think it's great that the director, I can see why they nominated it, because game recognizes game, and they saw it for what it was, and thank God they saw it, and they rewarded it. So I don't think it's as much of a snub as that they went with the right guy, and he did, but I do think, I mean, the theory is that they don't like actors, you know, straying out of their lane, and that they're always, you know, that's the Affleck effect, and that might be part of it too. That they just feel like he's got it all, you know, the man has everything. Why give him the? I don't know. I don't really at that level. I don't really know what's going on in their minds.
Was there an acting performance that you said, "Wow, I sure thought this person would be nominated"?
Well, I had been rooting for Ethan Hawke all year.
Because you like First Reformed.
I really thought
you like that.
He would get it.
Yeah.
And they did nominate First Reformed for script for Paul Schrader. I'm so happy he's going to just be there. You know, it's cool.
Yeah.
It's cool that both Schrader and Spike Lee are getting their due this year. I think that's just lovely. But, yeah, I was really rooting for Ethan Hawke. I just think that's a magnificent performance. But, you know, that movie is very off-putting. You know, it's a very difficult, gnarly movie, and it's hard sometimes to separate the performance from the movie, but it's possible to do, and we're going to talk about The Wife, I'm sure, and
yes.
You know, that's not a great movie, you know, it's not a great movie, but her performance is just inarguably great, in my opinion, you know, so I mean, I think they should be able to separate the two, but in this case, I guess he just didn't make the cut.
We know all about Oscars so white, and we know all about what appears to be sort of overt attempts to make it a more diverse awards night. Did you sense in the year of Trump, did you sense any political theme to the nominations at all? Or are you willing to say, you know what, they got the right people and no, there's no theme?
Yeah, there is a theme for sure, but I just think that's because the movies, I mean, that really reflects the movies we saw this year. And I don't think anything was inappropriate. I mean, obviously we saw, you know, there is a theme running through Black Panther, Black Klansman, Green Book. I'd put Green Book in there. But then that was the same theme in Sorry to Bother You and Blind Spotting and The Hate U Give. And that's what's on people's minds. And so that's the art we're seeing. And that's what they're, you know, so I think I don't think there's a hive mind where they're like, oh, let's send a political message. I honestly really don't see them doing that.
Okay.
In my opinion, in my experience, look, I don't live in L.A. I don't really rub elbows with Academy members that often. But the little that I have and the times that I've actually interviewed them and just casual conversations, they're like us. They vote for the stuff they like. You know, they vote for the movies that make them feel something. Often it's something that makes them feel really good, which is why I think Bohemian Rhapsody got in, even though I don't think it's a great movie. It's such a powerful, it's such a fun movie to watch, and it's just so emotional. And that's what they'll do. Like, they're not as picky or discerning as I think we sometimes think they are. You know, they're going for the stuff that really makes them feel something, you know, feel strongly.
So,
but, you know, I take your point, though, because, I mean, you look at Vice, and even The Favorite, you know, has a lot of interesting resonances in terms of power and corruption and toadying and flattery, which you could certainly, you know, overlay onto our political culture today. But I don't see them acting from an ideological point of view. I really don't.
We are going to have plenty of time before the Oscars to ask you who you think is going to win. I'm not going to get into that now. What I am going to say is that a couple of years ago, in an attempt to, you know, recognize, I thought, movies that were blockbuster movies and that were not necessarily critical favorites, they opened up the category of Best Picture from not just 5 to as many as 10. This year they have 8. I have seen some of these, not all of these. I don't know that there's a great picture in there. And I'm not, Black Panther, everybody enjoyed, but I'm not a comic book guy.
Right.
And Roma, I'm not going to watch. And it may be the greatest thing of all time. But I've said this before, I don't like to read movies. But I've got, I have watched five movies that have resulted in a lot of nominations. And I'd like to go over them with you. I'm going to tell you, I watched Vice, I watched The Wife, I watched Black Klansman, I watched The Favorite, I watched Will You Forgive Me. The only movie that I thought was good, the only one I thought was a good movie top to bottom, was Will You Ever Forgive Me?
Yeah.
I just really, that came out of nowhere to me, and I really liked it. I'm not a Melissa McCarthy fan, because most of the time we see her, she's profane and loud, and it's the same character. And there are echoes of that in her, but this is a real performance. This was the only movie of these five that I saw that struck me as even attempting to be a real movie. Now, you're a movie critic, and you can slam me around for this, but the others, for me, as movies, they were just eh. And Will You Ever Forgive Me? Melissa McCarthy and Richard Grant, who looks like a thin Christopher Walken from England. I mean, they are, that movie, you don't want that movie to stop. And and so please attack me for the others if you'd like.
No, I'm not going to attack you. I mean, it's obviously it's subjective. And I agree. You know, I enjoyed Can You Ever Forgive Me for some reason. I don't know why it didn't send me the way it sends a lot of people. And I agree with you. I loved them. I loved him. I think he's fantastic. I think he made that movie, frankly.
He's got, how can he not win? How can there be a better supporting act? Maybe there is. I don't know.
Because he really did. I mean, if you think about it, like, to me, she was playing herself. Like, people were saying, what a stretch.
No, that's probably who she is.
Stretch.
Yeah.
She just toned it down. She, like you said, she's played that curmudgeon before, and it was a toned-down version of a character she's played a lot, actually. But I take your point. And what I loved about that movie was it really got the milieu right. I mean, it was such a world-building exercise in 1990s New York, and I loved being in that world again, you know, pre-cell phone, pre-everything. It was just, in you know, those antiquarian bookshops. It's like, oh, that's my happy place.
I mean, that was that attempted to give you a beginning, a middle, and an end, to me.
True.
To me.
You're right. I mean, look, let's take them. Let's see. Let's start with The Favorite. I mean, The Favorite is a romp. It's edgy and weird. It's trying something different. It's you know, this is a case where I feel like, as a critic, I'm looking at things a little bit differently, only because that director is such a critic's darling, this guy Yorgos Lanthimos. And I have not been that hot on his films before. And this was the first one that I actually could, that really did have a beginning, middle, and end for me.
You know,
that it sustained my interest all the way through.
And so 30 minutes in, I'm looking around. There's nobody in the room. I'm looking around going, what am I
doing?
And I'll tell you this. I think Emma Stone is great. Great. She can play anything and be convincing. And I appreciate this movie, but it didn't win my heart ever.
Yeah, I did enjoy the dialogue. I did enjoy those performances. I loved Olivia Colman.
I liked
the kind of bent, crazy, whack, cracked sensibility of it, and the cynicism of it. I mean, it is unrelentingly cynical, which is usually something I don't vibe to, but in this case, I went with it. The Wife, I take your point, not a great movie.
No, well, it's essentially what I said yesterday. It's a stage play. That's what it is. It's a two-character stage play, and it devolves.
I mean,
It devolves, and at the end, you just hate everybody in the movie other than Glenn Close, who's a very, very controlled performance. I can't tell you how much I hate Christian Slater in that movie. I want to see somebody punch him in his Adam's apple, cave in his entire throat.
That scene in the bar with the two of them, I thought was one of the best scenes in the film.
That's a very good scene. I hate him,
though. In that scene,
she's very good.
Absolutely extraordinary.
But she should have thrown a drink at him. She should have.
But you're rewriting. I mean, you know, we can't rewrite. Like,
okay,
can't we?
And
just kidding,
Dan. The new Wiki is someone's going to make $1 billion on that.
She's very good, but it's not. I don't recommend the movie.
No, I wouldn't ever defend the movie as a great movie. But her performance to me is a great screen performance.
Black Klansman to me, it's just a cartoon on the edges. I mean, the people in it, the people cast on the edges or it's okay, it's a true story, it's fine, but and Vice is so unrelentingly mean. It's just so mean.
See, Vice with me, this guy, Adam McKay, I give him so much credit. He's trying to do something different. And I always appreciate that with any filmmaker. He's literally trying to invent a new language for getting these very complex stories across in this very lively way. I happen to hate that style. I just don't like it. I didn't like The Big Short. I didn't like this one because I think it's scattershot. And I think that even though he's trying to do something complex, it results in something kind of simplistic and not very deep. And it's not nearly as deep as you think it is.
It isn't. It's a superficial, mean look at people. But Christian Bale is amazing.
He is amazing. Give it up for that. But yeah, I didn't like it either. But you know, what was I going to say? Oh, and the other thing. When you say it was mean, it's mean without any real insight.
To what end?
Insight.
Yeah, to
you know,
what? Like, there's no insight to it.
Look, he can take it. He's as tough as they come. But if you're going to come at him correct. I mean, come at him with really strong, you know, you need a strong, strong argument.
It's very mean to George W. Bush.
The only argument they had was he wanted power. And it's like, no, I think there was more going on there.
So I'm looking at these movies, and what I said the other day was, you know, it's not Michael Clayton. I mean, to me, Anne, and maybe you don't feel this way because it is your job to watch movies. And we're going on and on and on because this is actually meaningful to me. I usually know about 10 to 15 minutes in when I'm watching a great movie. I just feel it, that this movie is great. And I don't care who's sitting around me, and I don't care what else is going on. I'm into this movie. And I haven't felt that way about anything that I saw. I haven't felt that way. Not great.
You know, sometimes I wonder, too. Because I get emails. I'm getting emails all the time about, oh, I didn't like Roma, and I didn't like this. And at this point, people are watching these on their TVs. And I do think it's a different emotional experience. And I think this is probably true of Black Klansman. I found that to be a really powerful experience. I saw it in a theater
with people.
You know, the prologue and then the epilogue, the whole, you know, and it's like to your point about Black Klansman, it isn't perfect. You know, it's got all the kind of strengths and weaknesses of a Spike Lee film where he just goes too far. You know, it's like it's a little bit it's a little anarchic. And it's a little over the top and overstated, and you know there are scenes that are corny and kind of they throw back to, I think he's kind of doing a throwback to 70s styles, in a really self-conscious way that kind of looks forced and mannered, but as a piece, I just thought it was really powerful and it was very personal to him and it got me. I don't know if I'd have that same experience if I were watching it on my TV alone.
That's a good
point. You
know? That's a good point.
So I just wonder if that's what
I think your cynicism really comes out when you're sitting alone. And somebody like me who's naturally cynical. But in a movie theater, you can get swept away by the other people who are there. Anyway.
Yeah, and just in the score and the whole. So what you should see, so are you going to see all the nominees?
No, I'm only going to see the ones I've got. The only one I have left, I have Black Panther left, and I have Bohemian Rhapsody left. That's all I've got. I don't have A Star Is Born. I don't have these. I don't have
Star
Green Book.
Star Is Born. I was going to say, you should see Green Book.
I'd like to see Green Book.
You know, because Green Book
it's
is like one of those classical, it's a classic movie. You know, I think it's more toward what you're talking about in terms of just being a conventional movie.
That's what I like. I like
a
conventional dinner
at a high level.
Conventional movie. I like to know what I'm eating. Thank you, Anne. Anne Hornaday,
goodbye.
Boys and girls. That was Anne Hornaday. For people who wonder, that was Anne Hornaday. I'm Tony Kornheiser.
You're listening to The Tony Kornheiser Show.
Please bear with me for a minute. It's going to take me just a little bit of time to get into character for this read.
Okay. Does this help? What character are you playing?
Does this help?
Me?
The winter sports season is one of the hardest times of year to get through without a cable subscription. From professional and college basketball to the on-ice hockey classics. Being exiled from the sports world is a nightmare. But now with ExpressVPN, you can stream all of your favorite teams in any sport on your computer, phone, or tablet. ExpressVPN is the biggest secret cable companies don't want you to hear about. ExpressVPN can get you any IP address in the world, letting you access sports streams available in other countries. It also lets you securely use the internet without being tracked by anyone. ExpressVPN keeps your online activity private and anonymous while you browse, email, download, or stream. Their easy-to-use app encrypts all your internet data and hides your IP address, protecting your entire connection. ExpressVPN costs less than $7 a month and runs seamlessly in the background of your computer, phone, or tablet. Every time you use the internet without ExpressVPN, you're putting your sensitive data at risk. Now, the reason I stumbled through that awkward phrase of on ice classic was because they write the copy for the fall sports season, and in real time, I'm trying to update that, and I was going to do something really nice about the winter classic and playing hockey outside, or maybe just bring you back to your favorite barn, but I made a mistake, so I apologize, and hopefully we can look past that.
I didn't know that.
Well, I certainly can't look past it.
So, to unlock access to the streaming content you want today and find out how you can get 3 months free, go to expressvpn.com/Tony. That's expressvpn.com/Tony for 3 months free with a one-year package. Visit expressvpn.com/Tony to learn more.
Good job.
Thanks,
That's
Dad.
A good job. That's very good.
This is the Tony Kornheiser Show.
Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is sent to us by Zach Cross. He says, I'm relatively new to your pod, but my father has been reading, writing, and listening to you since he moved to the DMV in 1984. We still possess dog-eared and well-read copies of Bald As I Want to Be and My Favorite Pumping Irony. Attached to this email is a new song I produced for Makati, which is called Perfect Girl. Makati wrote the lyrics and performed the vocals on this song. I was responsible for the melody and the instrumentation. We'd be honored if you played it in one of your guest segments and at the conclusion of the podcast. We performed Perfect Girl and the accompanying album YLLW, maybe that's yellow, I don't know, publicly for the first time on Saturday, January 12th in Vancouver, Canada. YLLW or yellow maybe is available in full on all the normal streaming sites, including Spotify, Apple Music, and YouTube. So if you want to listen to music, if you are Makati or people like Makati, M-A-K-A-D-I, I hope I pronounced that correctly, and you want to send us music that will indeed be played in full at the end of the podcast and used as bumper music in the middle of the podcast, Michael, how do you do it?
Send us your music by emailing it to jingles@tonykornheisershow.com.
Are we selling?
Yeah, so the idea of the gift with the purchase through the Johnny O code was a little hard to pull together at the last minute. So this is a short run, but we're just going to give any listeners 20% off their purchase. Again, this is really just for the next week or so, but okay. Super TK, because we have the Super Bowl coming up. We'll have more to announce with them hopefully in the spring, but this will get you anything you need for right now. And I was emailing with Rob Kulpian from the TK shop yesterday, and we're working towards some laser-etched TK wine glasses.
Oh, wow.
Now, based on your drinking habits, they will be stemless.
Wow, that would be very nice.
And we're also working on some nice little gifts for listeners who stop by the podcast, things that they can take with them home.
That's really nice.
Tchotchkes.
That would be great.
Love it.
All right, Nigel, do you have news
Flat screens and stuff.
I do indeed, Mr. Tony. Before we start the news proper, I just want to remind folks the address here is 5247 Wisconsin Avenue when you want to send those Craftsman tools to Tony.
No,
that's the address.
Sweet one.
Please don't.
Yes. Mr. Tony, lots going on. I think a few people were distracted by James Harden's big night last night, but I think most people were focused on the game at the Dr. Biley Court with Binghamton Bearcats hosted
the Riverhawks
of UMass Lowell. And
how'd we do?
We've talked about this in the last couple of games. They've got
a very bad first half.
Terrible start, like 14 points, 16 points, and they can't dig themselves out of that hole. Last night, 44 points in the first half.
Boom.
44
Boom.
In the first. Yes. I assume we won that
Running
game.
Running and gunning.
Well, they were up 44-39 at the half. And the Riverhawks chipped away and chipped away and finally pulled away.
You don't have to chip away that much in a five-point deficit.
Well,
two shots.
One point at a time.
So they chipped away just briefly.
Hit a shot, got to stop, hit another shot.
They end up winning the match.
It's not a match, but it's fine.
85-79.
At least he said the
What is our record now in league? Now we're 1-3 in league.
1-4, 5-15 on the season overall.
Not a great start.
And this spoils some great efforts by Sam the Sham Sessoms. 32 points for him. And the big potato, Caleb Stewart, 22 points and 16 boards. So just
double. If they go for 54, you got to win.
Yeah, you think you're going to win that game going away.
It's Beal and Wall.
So this probably puts them firmly on the bubble for the NCAA tournament.
We're on the bubble. Yes, we are.
Mr. Tony, back to the NBA. It is not good news for Victor Oladipo.
Who's local for us. He's a DeMatha kid.
That was sad to see.
He suffered a serious knee injury. They're going to do an MRI later today to find out how serious, but the initial thinking is that he very well could be done for the year.
Well, Indiana, which is a contender, Mike and I were talking about this yesterday. Apparently, Memphis has put Marc Gasol and Mike Conley Jr. on the trading block. And so you ask yourself, well, who might want these things? Now, Mike thought that the Lakers would want to acquire Mike Conley Jr. The problem is he makes like $30 million. Mm-hmm. So to work that out, you'd have to trade Ball, Ingram, somebody else. I mean, you'd really have to trade a lot of big young talent, and I don't know that that's going to happen. I thought Indiana would be a good place for him to go because the East, with LeBron out of the East is open. Yep. It's open. You have Boston. You have Toronto. You have the 76ers, the Pacers,
Milwaukee,
the Bucks, the Nets. Unlike the Wizards, the Nets have gotten very good in a hurry with D'Angelo Russell,
and Spencer
Everybody hated when he was with the Lakers. Everybody hated him, and now all of a sudden they're 11-1 in their last 12 home games. Now the Wizards have done well without John Wall, but Mike Conley Jr. is pretty good. Mm-hmm. He's a pretty good player. So
and
I don't know where
Marc Gasol but now, is. I mean, it's not a big guy league anymore, but he's a very good.
He can shoot.
In the Nikola Jokic kind of mold, he's a big guy who can pass and shoot.
Yes, and
he's not
now
young,
I don't know if you're Indiana, do you want to do that now? Do you want to do that? Because with Oladipo out.
Probably not.
I don't know what you got.
That's
I don't
a
know
shame.
If you have a chance.
It's a shame. Back to college basketball. Number one, Tennessee Volunteers win a close one over Vanderbilt, 88-83 in overtime, as the Volunteers maintain the number one ranking.
I watched the end of that game.
What's interesting about that is that the last time Tennessee was number one, and I had no idea that they were number one in 2008 with Bruce Pearl. I had no idea. Mm-mm. But they were number one. The very next game was at Vanderbilt. They got beat badly, and they never regained their footing. They never did. This is a Vanderbilt game, and it almost happened again.
An 0-5 going in.
It almost happened again.
At Vanderbilt?
Tony, Grant.
I don't know. Yes. They have that weird sunken
Grant
too, right?
It's actually a raise.
No, it's raised.
Oh,
you sit down underneath.
Right. You sit underneath.
Same thing.
Grant Williams for the Vols had one of the most interesting lines I have ever seen. If I told you he scored 43 points on 10 of 15 shooting.
That's all?
What would you assume? How many threes?
8, 9, or 10.
Okay, he had 0 threes. He was 0 for 2 from 3.
So he got
23 of 23 from the line.
Yeah, he got fouled a lot. He
rarely see that in a college game.
Yeah, jeez. 23 of 23 was that's unreal.
To the Australian Open, Rafa Nadal is the first half of the finals. He'll either face Novak Djokovic, or is it Lucas Puy? Yes, Lucas Puy of France. They will play later on tonight, so I didn't have his name right in front of me. And on the women's side, it will be Naomi Osaka versus Petra Kvitova in the women's final.
Naomi Osaka is the very young girl who won the U.S. Open, which was the last major that has been played. If she were to win this and win two in a row, that would sort of establish her as a big-time rising star.
Then people start saying greatest of all time, right? We have to have that conversation.
A little early for that, but you know, she did beat Serena in the finals of the U.S. Open, and I think she's in her teens.
Yeah, she's very young.
She's 18 or 19.
She played here at the City Open.
Do you know her?
I had a chat with her. She wasn't the greatest of talkers. She won a match, and I said, you know, wow, it's a great match. She said, I played like crap.
I like that.
Yeah. But she's a terrific, terrific player.
She's raised where?
Raised here in the United States. Right. She plays under the Japanese banner, but she, I mean, for all intents, if you met her, you would think that she was born and raised in America.
It's like Sharapova.
Yes. Yes. You know.
Nadal, to me, I mean, it feels as though he's been here forever.
Well, he has.
He's 32. He's not that old. I mean, he's now healthy.
He has punished his body in ways that Federer never did. So his longevity will not be the same as Roger Federer's.
He's got 17 Grand Slams. So if he wins
but he's got how many French Opens? I mean,
10 or 11, something like that.
You know, I mean,
but if he wins this, then you think, well, he'll probably win the French. So that could be 18 and 19. It puts him one behind Federer.
Do you think he's a better player than Federer? Head to head, he beats Federer.
He was at
that's
the
interesting.
He was there. Yeah, he was better than him. That's a tough one. That's a tough one.
Okay. Tony Naomi Osaka, 21 years old.
21? Okay, I thought yes. She was younger than that. Okay.
To football, Mr. Tony. Larry Fitzgerald will be back for his 16th
ready
season.
To take on there your was. Master
sorry?
Yeah, that's all right. We'll just reset the board. Real
bloody
quick.
Pop-up ads. Any speculation that he would retire?
So Larry Fitzgerald is a first ballot Hall of
yes.
Famer. He's got all the records in the world. He could very well end up with more catches than any wide receiver ever, other than Jerry Rice, who is the greatest of all time, and nobody with a brain would dispute that. Jerry Rice
currently
is
has
that
1,303
good.
Receptions.
So he's also going to be going back, and this is interesting because he talked about retiring. Josh Rosen will be the quarterback in his second year. Showed nothing particularly spectacular in his first year. Cliff Kingsbury is going to be the coach. He gets that job because everyone figures that he can mold a passing attack like you've never seen. So that's why if you're Larry Fitzgerald, you go back because you think, you know, I'll be in the slot. I don't have the speed I used to. But this guy, you know, this guy's going to make it happen, and it's going to be a lot of fun. The pushback on that is that Larry Fitzgerald is a member of Whisper Rock, a member of Augusta,
right.
and a member of Seminole, where last weekend, Larry Fitzgerald on the first par three, I believe, on the back, number 13, facing away from the ocean, hitting away from the ocean, he aced one while playing with Barack Obama and the great Jimmy Dunn. And I don't know that, you know, he's made a lot of money. I don't know. What are you doing? What are you doing?
Is he very good at golf?
Not very good.
Is he like
player.
A single digit handicap?
Oh,
yes.
Sure.
Oh, well, I count that as that's
oh, no.
very
no,
good
very
in my
very good is scratching down.
Well, okay. Yeah. Yeah. But so he's single digit, like a Steph Curry level golfer.
I don't know that he's that good.
I would say not as good as Steph, but close.
Better than Romo.
Oh, I would not. I would not say
Romo.
He's better.
Romo is outstanding.
No,
right?
He's not better than Romo.
Yeah. So sort of on Charles Barkley's level.
No, he's better than Charles Barkley.
He's got an open invitation to swing it with me.
Yeah, there you go.
Happy to get that club out there. Shoot 200.
Yeah.
Speaking of golf, the Farmers Insurance Open begins today. Torrey Pines in, I'm not sure how you pronounce it, La Jolla?
La Jolla?
All over La Jolla.
Is that what it is?
All over La Jolla.
Tiger Woods would tee off at 1:40 p.m. Eastern time.
I'm not going to make my son talk about this.
Will you be live tweeting Tiger's round, Mike?
If I were to talk about this, I'd be more interested in the Rory McIlroy-Ricky Fowler pairing, which is going off just before them. I'm not sure on the same side or not. But Rory is committed to playing in the United States this year. We need to see if he can get back to the winning ways. We've seen him falter a lot at the end of tournaments, which you never thought would happen with him. And Ricky Fowler is starting to use a new golf ball. He was the one
What's
of
he
the,
using?
He's now switched to the TaylorMade TP5X. And a lot of this is he says he's getting about a half a club more in distance with his irons, and he's flighting the driver a little bit better. I don't
flighting.
Think you really see that come
Perfect
into play
verb.
This tournament. But you also want to take a look at number
driver.
One, Justin Rose, who is on a new club deal. So he's now playing with the Japanese brand Homna, and also Jordan Spieth, who had a really interesting practice round with Tiger and just puts everything in perspective. You talked yesterday about Tiger's dominance at this golf course. He said to Jordan, I've been playing this course longer than you've been alive.
Yeah, sure. Sure.
What is Justin playing? I've never even heard
so
of that.
So these were just
irons?
A very... Yeah, well, he has... I think it's a 10-club deal, so he could be switching in a few wedges. He has a new special putter, which has been his sort of MO, is missed short putts. I'd be looking at how all these players are putting 6 feet and in, because the weather is going to be a little bit warm. You're going to see that Poana. Ooh, ding. I mentioned grass. No, but
so self-aware
ding,
meta.
Ding, ding, ding. No, these are always a but boutique golf club.
Homa,
they
said
were Homna, H-O-N-M-A. Okay. Some of them were Homa. Plated in gold.
Sweet.
And wow. You rarely see a number one switch
Does
after
anybody,
ascending to that number.
When you make
and
a club
success.
Deal, you don't do all the clubs, right? You reserve the right to take a couple of clubs that are your favorites with a different brand, don't you?
Correct. And you're seeing more of a trend now that you see the OEM. Shrinking, so you have fewer and fewer companies that are willing to spend big dollars
OEM
on saying
shrinkage.
Buying Tony to a 14 club deal.
Right.
So yeah, a lot of times you'll see them put in their own putter. They'll maybe stick with a different driver. It depends on what they want from you. If you're someone who's known for your putting and you're very visible on Sundays, a la, say, Jack Nicklaus when he had that very recognizable 1986 putter, you want that thing front and center, but there's wiggle room in that.
Okay. I just want to do one
Would you like to interrupt me?
Yes, one equipment update. First. I've decided that this season I'll be playing an orange ball because when I hit it in the woods, it's much easier to find. So point. I don't know if any pros want to. It does make it easier to find than the little white one.
I
always thought
you used the Precept ladies golf ball.
Yeah, I would play it. You know, I'm trying to flight the ball more not in the woods. So we'll see. We'll see how it plays out.
I just
want to
control the spin on the short iron.
We'll see how it plays out. I'll keep you updated.
Mr. Tony, I have good news for you.
What's it?
In the real estate market, this is apparently a seller's market. The most expensive home in U.S. history, the purchase has been made, $238 million.
Wow.
So surely the little house would, you know, gone at something.
Where was this?
This is Ken Griffin. Ken Griffin, a hedge funder. This is in Central Park South, a four-story condo. It includes...
Couldn't even afford a single family, huh?
Right. It includes a sports club, a juice bar, a library, and a basketball court on the premises. And if you think, this is the only place he's got a $59 million condo in Chicago, $60 million penthouse in Miami, $250 million worth of land in Palm Beach, where he wants to build a compound, and a $122 million London mansion. So I'm sure
50-year-old Kenneth Griffin, Harvard University educated, estimated net worth, anyone?
More than 238.
$9.9 billion.
So just a reminder, Jeff Bezos' current net worth, $140 billion.
I'm pretty sure Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez would like to speak to Mr. Griffin.
Hashtag make that rich.
He would not like to speak to her, I'm guessing.
Yeah, sure. Okay, we'll get out of here. We'll have old guy when we return. I'm Tony Kornheiser.
You're listening to The Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is Old Guy Radio for the day. This is Neil Diamond. This is Brother Love's Travel and Salvation Show. And you ask, why are we playing this? And so I asked Nigel, why are we playing this?
Because Mr. Diamond is celebrating his 78th birthday today.
78th?
78th, yes.
So he's done. He's done. Performing? He's got Parkinson's,
yes,
I believe.
Yes.
And he said he's not going to sing anymore.
Yes.
I'm glad Jeannie's not here because Jeannie thinks Neil Diamond is worthless.
She's not a fan.
I am a fan. I mean, there's pretense.
I'm a fan.
In the area of critical commentary, there's pretense in some of the songs, like I Am, I Said to Only a Chair, and you know, stuff like that. Longfellow Serenade, you go, okay, stop. But when he started, he was like a kid from Brooklyn who was channeling Elvis to a degree. And I thought he was really, really good. He wrote a lot of stuff. He wrote in the Brill Building. Before he recorded, he wrote. Yeah, he was in the Brill Building for a while. And I mean, I think a lot of the things that he did were very good. And he became an enormous star. And then did that crossover deal where he was in movies.
Yeah.
Did the jazz singer,
that's right.
And made a lot of money doing that. And I think that Neil Diamond, I don't want to say that he's beloved or anything like that, but I think Neil Diamond is respected as somebody...
Beliked.
You know, right, beliked. Beliked. He's respected as somebody who was in for the long haul.
A few people know creatively he was fueled by his deep hatred of immigrants.
Right.
Which is...
He wrote this
that's
song...
That's a Will Ferrell thing.
Yeah, he wrote this song after a big show at the Forum, and then they ran over somebody.
Yeah. Well, I actually
both of those are references to a Will Ferrell, Neil Diamond skit from SNL, which you should...
Look that up on YouTube. It's
Google
brilliant.
It up.
That song, by the way, was the title track of that album. Came out in 1969, topped at number 22 on the charts.
So the
can we all agree though it's too much already with Sweet Caroline? Like
stop.
let's stop Boston.
The Boston people like it.
Nigel's angry at me.
I'm sort of done with it too. I mean, it's a nice tradition, but yeah, you know.
The Warriors are in town tonight in Washington D.C. The Warriors, Steph Curry. That the price of admission is you get there early and you watch Steph Curry warm up. I know you've seen it a lot, but it's. Wilbon wants me to go.
You should go.
Oh,
just go for the first half.
Wills will show up for this game. That's what they do.
Yes,
that's their MO.
You should go.
I don't know.
You should go for the first half. You'd be out of there by 8:30.
Do you know who you are?
It's going to be cold.
You should go.
What do you mean, do I know who I am?
Do you know who you are? You
I
should
do.
Go.
I
yeah,
I
well, you should go.
I
we all know how this will play out. You don't want to go. You'll be convinced to go. Then tomorrow you'll come in. You know what? I actually had a good time.
You will have a good time.
You know who I saw? I didn't see him in 25 years.
That is totally right.
I don't have a ticket. I don't know that I can
get a ticket.
Tone, I got, here we go. I'm on SeatGeek.
I'm not buying a ticket.
Tone, I'm on SeatGeek. Section 110, row L, 298. You can get two tickets. You buy the one next to you, so you ensure no one sits next to you. I like that move.
Both yes. next to him. $900 by both.
The aisle seat.
So you're in for $600.
Oh, that's
row
a steal.
L. You're right in the
Who's
middle
the
there.
Who's the PR guy with the Wizards? Do we know?
I don't know.
Well, let's look that
can
up.
You imagine him sitting in the middle of row L for the first half of this game, sharing a popcorn?
Oh, alternatively, here's section 403.
That's up there.
Row G, you knock that out for 84 each.
Yeah, you can't. It's hard to go up top in that building.
The amount of money that this ticket costs is, I am betting, higher than virtually any Wizards ticket all year.
Well, I'll look on SeatGeek and compare. I'll look on
SeatGeek. It's your one time to see Golden State.
Yeah, I would think you're totally correct.
And I don't know that they have any other particular rival.
Will they be wooing Durant?
No, like and then they've got, you know, and Wall's
KD to DC.
Still clearing cap space.
Wilbon could go and hold court with Steve Kerr.
Well, Tone, just to your, Tone, to your
just
point.
Just look up the PR gun.
You can get, they're on the road after this for three, but you can get tickets to the Pacers at the Wizards starting from $7 and that's Bucks at Wizards starting from $18. Want to guess what the lowest ticket is for tonight? Golden State at the Warriors?
Golden State ticket. At Wizards.
Yeah, lowest Wizards ticket. Rather.
No.
Because
66.
Bucks.
Yeah, because it's
so it's Warriors.
It's Golden State. Yep. They're a great team. I wanted to mention, as long as we were going to do local, I wanted to mention, and this is very rare, in my experience at the Washington Post, I don't recall anything like this. Maybe it happened. I'm not exactly sure. Both Barry Zwarluga and Sally Jenkins killed the Redskins, killed Bruce Allen. I'm going to read Sally's lead because Barry hits harder than Sally, which doesn't usually happen. If Bruce Allen is to be trusted, and he isn't, the Washington Redskins, quote, are close, unquote, to becoming a contender. The unembarrassable huckster who serves as president of the Washington Redskins answered questions publicly for the first time in well more than a year, and it went about as you would expect. According to Allen, sales are up and morale is at an all-time high. Next, he's going to tell you to buy a Vegematic or dial 1-800-MATTRESS.
Wait, this is the nicer of the two pieces?
Yeah. It was pure pitchman spiel. Allen fancies himself the big closer, but in fact, he's a decade-long loser with a 59-84-1 record who has presided over decline in attendance so precipitous it has alarmed the league office. All he has to sell is something old as something new. In answer to fans' irate questions about what entitles him to keep his job under these circumstances, Allen just pattered and declared his, quote, passion for the franchise, unquote. Hey, you know what? I have a passion for cooking. Maybe I will take over a local restaurant so that I can give the entire community ptomaine poisoning. And that's not as hard as Barry's.
Oof.
That's not as hard as Barry's. I'm going to go inside and read.
How is that possible? What did Barry say?
Here's what Barry says. Now, though, Allen has, speaking of Bruce Allen, has evolved into something beyond an embodiment of his bossy fanboy instincts. In just more than nine seasons as an executive with Washington, Allen has developed into a necessary shield for the owner. His spiel during practices for the Senior Bowl on Tuesday were bound to draw criticism because the franchise's top executive hadn't taken questions in 588 days. Not that there was anything to discuss over those 588 days, really, other than the replacement for fired GM Scott McLuhan, Doug Williams, the outgoing quarterback Kirk Cousins, the incoming quarterback Alex Smith, the incoming quarterback's devastating injury, broken leg, the hiring of a new executive to lead the business side, Brian LaFemina, the firing of the new executive on the business side after just 7 months, wow, the failure to sell out even the home opener waiting list, the claiming of a player who had been arrested on domestic violence charges some 48 hours earlier, Reuben Foster, the plans for a new stadium with or without a moat, the retention of Jay Gruden as head coach, career record 35-44-1, and the seemingly unsettled nature of Gruden's staff, special teams coach, left for same job elsewhere, defensive coordinator sat in for interviews with other candidates to take his job, etc. On Tuesday in Mobile, Alabama, because taking questions in, Ashburn would be inconvenient, Allen spoke about the passion of our fans being fantastic. But he apparently has neither the instinct nor the fortitude to regularly stand up and meet that passion with his own. That is different than Sally's.
Crush. Yeah.
Sally's is insult laden, which is the way I would have gone. And Barry's
Jeffrey
is
Mayer
point
style.
By point.
Substantive.
By point. Yeah. Just a shredding of this guy. Both on the same day, both are killing Bruce Allen. Does that mean anything?
So Bruce Allen said from Mobile that
it doesn't matter. It's
like killing Trump.
Well, it's a
it's like writing to somebody. What does it mean?
Well, at least Trump. I mean, at least Trump is you know, in 2 years will be up for a vote of the public.
That's right.
Dan Snyder owns a team. If Dan Snyder wants Bruce Allen, Bruce Allen stays. It's a dictatorship. I mean, that's always been the case. I think Barry's onto it with the Shield. You know, it, the more Bruce Allen gets attacked, the less theoretically. Yeah. Dan Snyder gets attacked. You know, I mean, he gets attacked kind of via Bruce
Allen. Dan Snyder
Allen,
has
but
not spoken out in like 10 years.
No, he hasn't said anything.
It's like 10 years.
He's counting his money.
Well, it's like it's not that much money. His only asset, his asset is the team.
Redskins, yeah.
So,
but underscoring Bruce and by extension the team's tone deafness, he said Monday or Tuesday when he spoke in Mobile, Bruce Allen I'm talking of now, said that he believed the reason why there were so few Redskins at the season finale, which was all Eagles, if you remember, right, the Eagles needed to win that game, and they completely took over the stadium, was that the Redskins roster had been so depleted. Redskins fans just didn't want to go see a bunch of backups, and they didn't want to go watch potentially an Eagles victory. Like, he does not understand
that people are
over this team and that experience, and they don't want to go there anymore.
Well, he's looking for rationalizations to explain these things.
And isn't this theory that we think that Snyder has, you know, is like the bear theory? If you're running from a bear, you don't have to be the fastest man in the world.
Faster than the other guy.
You don't have to be the most popular. Just be more popular than this guy. So he just, you know, deflects it.
But at some point, Bruce's decision-making, forget whatever press he gets, but his decision-making... personnel.
Is this off the field or on the field?
On.
Because they're winning
on
off
mostly.
The field.
Although also off the field with Reuben Foster. I mean, DJ, the whole DJ Swearinger thing, the Monte Nichols. I mean, forget even on the field, but his personnel decision making does have to, at some point, even though he's a shield for Dan Snyder, like, he's in charge of all of this. They stink.
So what happens?
Nothing.
Okay,
I know there's no account. I get it. There's no account. No, it's maddening, but there's no account.
Before we go, I need to ask about what has happened with, if I understand this correctly, I really enjoy the back and forth between Nancy Pelosi and Donald Trump.
Yeah, who doesn't?
That's fantastic.
Are you not entertained?
That's great fun.
Passive aggressive 101.
But if I understand this correctly, you are required by the Constitution to give a State of the Union address at some point every year, I think.
It's not every year. It essentially says from time to time in the Constitution. It's been interpreted broadly as every year. But
traditionally, the president goes to the House chamber and delivers the speech. Mm-hmm. Nancy Pelosi said, no, not so fast.
Yeah, in order for that to happen, it is technically the right of the Speaker of the House. You have to invite the president, and then you have to introduce a resolution that says, we're going to have this bicameral session, so all the senators and all the House members will be in the House, and the president will address it. So if you don't introduce that resolution, it doesn't happen.
And he
and
has,
she said, I ain't doing
I'm not
it.
Doing it. And
short story, Trump wins.
How does he win?
I don't know,
but he's declaring
victory. So
he win?
Well, I would say he lost and backed down and blinked in the face of this. But
the shorter version
of my analysis is Trump wins.
Okay. Yes.
Yeah, because he said,
could he have just done it from the White House or Chatter or anywhere?
He wants the. He first of all,
why would he do that,
I'm kidding about the winning thing. He clearly blinked and lost. Okay, he wants the. The splendor, the officialness, the pomp and circumstance of coming into the House and everyone, you know, and there's the lines of people trying to shake his hand, and he gets up there and he says something that Democrats don't like, and they sit and Republicans go crazy. He wants all of that.
Yeah,
he wants the scene. He doesn't want to just give a speech at a campaign rally. So he'll do it once the government reopens. I thought he would do a speech from the White House or a speech from the border or a speech from Independence Hall in Pennsylvania. But I guess his love of pomp and circumstance is probably what wins out.
Is there an adult in the room on either side?
No.
There's none, right?
No. And these people attack me on Twitter, period. But also they attack me for, I said that Nancy Pelosi, her beginning foray into this was 100% political. This idea that, like, because of the shutdown, they couldn't ensure that they would be secure. He's the president of the United States. And the Supreme Court, really? They could probably spare a few people to make sure that that's safe. So this began in politics. This is a way that she could jam it to him.
Yeah.
So then he re-jammed her with the old, your flight's in the tarmac?
No.
Whoops, I just repealed. I just took away
your
plane.
Killed your vacation to Afghanistan. Yeah.
So then she is now exerting her right. I mean, it is interesting in that she is doing a Trump to him, which is, you stake out the most extreme position and then you do it, right? Yeah. You as opposed to you call the bluff. I don't think he thought she would. She did. Now we're in a, you know, by the way, government still closed. Yeah, day 34.
Let me just add to this that the shutdown gets extra real.
What are we doing out here?
When the National Air Traffic Controller starts saying, look, there's a lot of planes up there.
Yeah.
We're really tired and stretched very thin. Yep. And, you know, something could happen. I mean,
that was yesterday.
God forbid something like that happen. I mean, it's on everyone's hands.
Tomorrow, like, I was just saying tomorrow, Gary, to add to your point, tomorrow's second
paycheck.
major payday that will be missed for federal workers.
Yeah, it's a little bit of pain. That's for
real. What are we doing out there, man?
Cupcakes, man. Cupcakes.
By the way, I found out, I believe, who the person is for the Washington Wizards. Kellyanne Conway, do I have that right?
She's not the Wizards.
Scott Hall. I believe.
Is that Hall?
He was a great wrestler.
VP Communications, I'm assuming that's who that would be.
Scott Hall. You give me a number later.
SeatGeek.com.
Director of Media Relations is...
DeAndre Phillips.
DeAndre Phillips.
Yeah. Well, who's Scott Hall?
The Vice VP of Communications.
He would be the head. You want to go to the head honcho.
Remember Matt Williams?
Well, I'm going to talk to him, right?
Yeah.
But you have a number for him later?
It does not. We'll try and
track
him.
Looks like 611.
No, it's not 611.
912?
We'll be...
Operator?
We'll be back with email and a jingle. I'm Tony Kornheiser.
You're listening to The Tony Kornheiser Show. The Tony Kornheiser Show.
Here comes Tony's mailbag. Got your email, faxes, and your notes. Here comes Tony's mailbag. Gotta read some for all you folks.
Thank you, Gary.
You're welcome.
Let me thank Washington Post movie critic Ann Hornaday. That's Ann Hornaday. We had Ann Hornaday on the show today, didn't we?
Ann on the show.
For coming on with the show.
Hornaday on a Thursday.
Today's sponsors, Lowe's and ExpressVPN. Remember to listen and subscribe to new and archived episodes of The Tony Kornheiser Show, wherever you listen to podcasts, including Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Google Play. If you listen to the show through iTunes, please leave us a review. From Patrick Thompson in New Orleans, do you want to know how ridiculous website names are? You cited Snapfish as a Belichickian made-up site, but it's a real thing. They print your photos on things. I think Belichick, he talked about Snapfish and Instaface.
Yes.
I think those are his favorite terms.
Worst, best.
From the Quinn family, to take a selfie on your iPhone,
Mighty Quinns.
Sweep up from the bottom, click reverse, then the shutter button, and boom, great selfie. Ask Chessie about posing. Ted's Dog in Richmond wrote this. P.S. I weigh 42 pounds. From Sam Angel. Is it just me or has it been a while since Junior's been on? What about Norman Chad? What are you not telling us? P.S. Rest in peace, the Ock. And P.P.S. I don't have a dog, but my nearly six-month-old baby girl is 15 pounds, 13 ounces. Good. From Buddy, another dog, who writes, the attached picture is of Buddy. Buddy is a Bichon Poo. Buddy weighs 15 pounds. Well, he probably weighs less now, given that he has been dead for 6 years. R.I.P. Buddy.
Wow.
This is getting
crazy. It's kind of dark.
Yeah. A little. From Gunnar Kane in Culpeper, Virginia. Right-handed, left sock, right sock, underwear, deodorant, left contact, right contact, shirt, head, left arm, right arm, left. It just goes on and on. Great Pyrenees, 165 pounds.
Biggest.
And a hound, 65 pounds. He refers to the Pyrenees as an idiot, and a hound as a bigger idiot. John Edinger in Syracuse, New York, Chris's favorite spot.
Yes,
dear Chessie's
there.
Dad, my dog Bailey is a 43-pound frisbee-catching long-haired mutt who recently graduated to therapy dog, 1/8 German Shepherd, 1/8 Standard Collie, 1/8 Quiche Hound, and 5/8 adorably indeterminate. That's right, you can have your dog's DNA results emailed to you for a nominal fee. We're told she was a border collie. Shout out to my office mate, Steve, who will hear this in 3 or 4 days. I don't know that I want my dog's DNA. I don't care. From Gary, I hope you're feeling better and the rib is healing. As an Eagles fan, I'm glad it wasn't a vertebral fracture. The last thing we need is a quarterback or podcast controversy. It's no controversy. Bob Kay in Gainesville, Florida. I have a pug named Bruno. He has IBD and diabetes. So if I go out for an extended period, we play a game of find the poop when I get home.
Oh.
Bruno sits in his chair while I search for the prize. And once I find it, he has this, but now you have to clean it up, big boy. Look on his face. Who says retirement is boring? Because of the content of this message, I will not say Edith Saliza. From Matt Schull.
That's nice. Kind.
In Kalamazoo, Michigan. Look, people. I'm sure you're all correct that Howard and Ann were both removed from the show at the direct order of the Rothschild family.
Colonel Sanders, the Rothschilds.
But consider the many other sins of the Kornheiser cult. The monkey isn't on the show from late February until late August. Sad. Surely this is the time when Tony and crew send him out to some medical research farm in the direction of Big Pharma. Harley and Aaron's Window Nation was always a front for the Church of Orange. Did anyone ever call Window Nation to speak to them in person? I doubt anyone here has Window Nation windows. Do they? Why? Because they don't exist. Just as we know the Earth is flat by simply looking at the horizon, we know Window Nation's phone number was a clandestine call to action issued to a cult. Mr. Tony was running a t-shirt sweatshop in preparation for Chatter for nearly a decade out of the ESPN 980 studios. The day he referred to the workermen outside his studios was an obvious clue, and the sales weasels, well, that's an anagram for a less a el su, which translates to Spanish as the less of the su. So sewing is involved somehow, that much is clear. And the leaf blower, where is the leaf blower? God help him and his family. If you aren't convinced that Tony is in the pocket of Big Pharma, the New World Order, and the Illuminati, you're just another sheeple.
Sad pretty that there was no mention of the Gettys in
pretty,
there.
Pretty persuasive.
Nailed almost everything.
David Pronsky in Ormond Beach, Florida. Quick update on my dog, Murphy. He's 45 pounds, and he's now killed 71 squirrels.
Wow.
Up from just over 60 since my last letter.
That's a serial killer.
Because I live in Florida, I don't wear socks, but right flip-flop, left flip-flop. From Jason Markinkoski, who writes, good afternoon, Mr. Tony. My wife and I have four dogs. Heidi, a 10-year-old, 95-pound female Bernese Mountain Dog. Gal, a 10-year-old, 35-pound female retired English Pointer. Rose Marie, a 40-year-old, 40-pound female Australian Shepherd mix. And Isla, our 1-year-old, 20-pound female Brittany Spaniel puppy. Side note, we missed you at our annual Christmas party, but don't worry, you will continue to be invited. And this is near Bluffton, South Carolina, which is where the Hardwicks live.
Go visit the May River Grill.
That's what we should do. If you're out on your bike, everyone, as always, do wear white.
You got to harvest your nuts right now, man.
Eddie.
Thank you, buddy.
Stop playing me, I'm somebody else, but I'm trapped in myself. I'd like to care, I wish it was something new, but to tell you the truth, I would kill to be you.
I'm going out tonight, hoping that I find the perfect. the Vans and my shirt's loose. I'm black so I can't blush. But that doesn't help much. Hyperventilating when I'm near the dance floor, palms sweating and tongue tied. I like to wear anime t-shirts. I like a big booty in a short skirt. Ramen noodles, breakfast, lunch, and dessert. The perfect girl would tell me all of that works. I'm a dark-skinned Bruce Lee Romeo. I'm not a fighter, that's the kicker, but the punchline is I know that I'm a winner. Just make a fool like this. Just wave your hands like this. Just take a hand with confidence and do your dance and get to stepping.